Welcome back, everybody, to the Triad of the Force podcast, the podcast from Puerto Rican friends coming together to do deep dives into Star Wars and other nerd-related media. These are Bad Batch Fridays, where we talk about every single episode of the third and final season of The Bad Batch. Today, focusing on, it's a doozy, episode 9, The Harbinger. We are also very excited to welcome back to the Triad our guest for tonight, Katrina Dennis from What's Glup and Podro Pascal. Welcome back, Katrina, to the Triad. We're so happy to have you back.
I'm so happy to be back. You guys are so awesome, and I miss you. And I'm really, really happy to be here talking about this episode, because I don't know if you know, but it meant a lot to me. So
We're so happy to have you. It was one of those like obvious things. We haven't talked to you in a while. So when I remember seeing the trailer for Bad Batch season 3, and then that big reveal happened, I mean, I was like, well, I guess we know who we have to invite over on the podcast. And here we are, and lo and behold, everything is amazing, and we're talking to you with the return of Asajj Ventress, and it feels good, it feels right, and it's perfect. So thank you for being with us. And it's actually kind of funny, because before, when we were figuring out the scheduling for the episode, and before screeners had gone out and all these things, we were like, we had all the names of all the episodes, and you know, I thought that the episode in which we were going to have Asajj's return was going to be the episode titled The Return.
The Return.
And then, you know, through the grapevine, we're not going to talk about like how things are, you find out about things. We decide to reschedule. And and thank the Force that we did, because it worked out perfectly, and the assumptions we made worked out for everybody.
Some intelligent guesswork, because I thought it was going to be next week's, because next week's is a 2-episode week, so I thought they would hold off Asajj Ventress for those 2 episodes, so I wasn't sure if it was going to be today, but I'm really happy that it was, because we get to talk about Asajj Ventress return with you, Katrina.
Yes!
We are only a minor fan of her.
Who is, I mean, a self-proclaimed Ventress truther, probably the foremost expert on Asajj Ventress. I know that Star Wars authors call on you to, you know, check in on Asajj canon. I know that you were consulted with Mike Shen for Brotherhood for some Asajj stuff, and you've written Asajj Ventress fan fiction. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that relationship you have with Asajj Ventress before we go into the episode proper?
Yeah, I mean, Ventress has been part of my life for like, you know, 20 years, a little over 20 years now. It'll be 21 next year since she debuted in the Clone Wars 2D cartoon. And, you know, little Katrina, who was like almost through high school, just to give you my age right there. When the Genndy Tartakovsky Clone Wars cartoons debuted, like I would come home, rush home and watch them, because it was such an exciting time to be a young Star Wars fan. And we were right in between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. And I wanted to know everything about what was happening in the Clone Wars. Because, you know, before that, all we knew about the Clone Wars was that it happened, and it was called the Clone Wars, and Obi-Wan and Anakin fought in it. And that's it.
And it was apparently terrible. And
And it was like terrible and awful.
It's terrible. Like, everybody's traumatized, but we don't know what happened.
Yeah, exactly. And so coming home, I was like always really excited about it. And that's like right off the bat, I was introduced to Ventress, who was this like all new, like cool, badass lady Sith acolyte. And I like fell in love immediately. So when the 3D animated cartoon came back and we had the movie and she had this big part, like my brain just exploded. And she's just been like this really special character to me. You know, she has survived against all odds. And like, it's very sappy to say, but like every time I face like a hard time in life, I'm like, you know, this could break me and like crush me up into little pieces. But like, if Ventress can survive like the genocide of her sisters, I can get past this. Like, I can keep going, you know? And I think she's like really inspirational for that, because it's never like, oh, okay, now I'm all better, I'm fully healed. It's always like, I'm getting better every time I come back.
Yeah.
And she's so unique in the Star Wars universe. Like, there are no other characters that are quite like her, who have her journey and her path. And this week was just like, we'll get into it, but it was so satisfying for her journey. Like, it was exactly where I wanted her to be when she came back. So,
Before we go into, like, this canon story, right, of Asajj's return, why don't you tell us a little bit about your story that you crafted for Asajj, where it falls into, you know, the Clone Wars narrative of her story, and, like, what we can expect to read from your Asajj story. Well, tell us a little bit about that.
Thank you. Thanks for asking me to do that. I wrote an Asajj Ventress fanfic duology. So it's like two parts. The first part is called Ventress Golden. I wrote that in collaboration with the Star Wars editor folks. I love them very much. And it's a story about how she finds and crafts her new lightsaber. And since I did not directly describe what the lightsaber looked like, it's technically still within canon. Like, it fits.
Hell yeah.
And it was one of those things where, like, I was on a really big, like, Treasure Planet kick at the time. So she goes to this spaceport where, like, these very, you know, traditional looking ships are, but they fly and it's very much like Treasure Planet. And she meets some of the locals and gets involved in taking down a crime ring. And I think that what it basically is, it's that definitive moment where, like, you know, it's fresh off of, I would say, right after The Wrong Jedi, after she has left Ahsoka behind, lost her lightsabers, and has to kind of, like, define who she is from there. That's the first step in her journey. And she ends up helping people, discovering Force sensitives with M counts, I guess you could say, who kind of, like, help her define what the Force means to them as people who aren't Jedi and have never had an interest in being Jedi or Sith or anything. They're just normal people who happen to have a little extra intuition.
Sounds familiar.
Sounds a little familiar. And it was a really fun story to write. And the second story is called Howl of the Banshee. It is about how she acquired the bounty hunting ship that she had in Dark Disciple. Is not the same ship she has this week. But she, all I knew about that ship in canon was that she stole it from the Black Sun Syndicate. And my brain just, like, sparked, and I was like, all right, well, she's going to go liberate a ship and a family of servants along the way by accident. So it's told from, like, a first person POV. I never name the first person. I never give them a gender. So I want to really, like, sit the reader in the position of someone who is being saved and liberated by a very unexpected hero. It's just a fun little story about a family and, like, kicking a bunch of rich people's butts and stealing one of their ships.
Love it.
God, I love it. Yeah. That sounds great. So much fun. And it's one of those great things about Star Wars and, like, all these characters that we fall in love with that, you know, inspire us to be creative and to, you know, create within the universe. I think it's one of those, like, awesome things. And a thing that I wish, like, more fans were able to kind of understand, that you can craft your stories, but also accept other stories and, like, accept that narratives can go, like, in different directions. And yeah, it's cool. And, you know, as we'll see a little bit with where this episode is, like, things don't necessarily have to contradict each other, because everything you were telling us from the stories that you've created for Asajj are kind of falling in line a little bit with where Asajj is in this episode and maybe in future episodes, which we can speculate about later. But before we get going to the deep dive of Asajj's return, let's get some, like, reactions to the episode. Nani, you had theories that this wasn't going to be Asajj's return. So coming into the episode, like, what was your initial reaction? Because Asajj came back, like, immediately. We go into that cave, we thought we were going to get something, and then all of a sudden, it's her. So what was your reaction to the episode?
So I watched the episode yesterday. It was, like, exhausting. I had class and work, and I was like, I'm just gonna watch this episode. I don't think it's gonna be the Asajj one, so I don't have all these many hopes for it. And then again, it starts with Pabu, and every time we start an episode with Pabu, I think this is the episode where it gets destroyed and it's done and it's gonna be sad and I'm gonna be super upset. So obviously then we get her going towards the cave, and I love Batcher. I think Batcher for me is kind of like her dire wolf. Like, you know, if it screams danger, listen to Batcher. So we know that there's going to be something in there. And then I started thinking, because you know, we were speculating that it could be the Asajj episode. And I was like, no, there's no way they're going to do it already. And then, you know, she walks into the cave and first you see like the silhouette and then mm-hmm. She gets like the flashlight to the face. And I was like, Asajj! like started screaming like an idiot. Oh my God, I cannot believe this is happening. So really unexpected, even within our speculation of maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, like that actual showing up in that moment that I was just with Omega, because I thought it was going to be maybe something with like the boys first or something. So mm-hmm. I thought it was really cool that I was kind of like a one-on-one with Omega first and then the boys come in. So I think it was a really good episode in that, aside from the fact that it's really exciting to see Asajj back, she didn't necessarily like steal the show because there was mm-hmm. still a lot of Omega happening. There's still a lot of like, the boys, you know, trying to be the parents and kind of overprotective and trying to see how all these new characters kind of fit into the dynamic. Mm-hmm. So I think all in all, it was a really good kind of self-discovery episode. So I really enjoyed it and I was really sad to see her fly away at the end of the episode. So I'm hoping we get a little bit more because somebody as big, you don't bring Asajj back for just right. like the one episode. So I'm really looking forward to how all the information that she brought also kind of shakes up the relationship and moving forward, what is going to happen. Mm-hmm. But all in all, I was really excited.
Katrina, your opinion about this episode, I'm dying to hear. So yes. What was your reaction to it? Like, did you know that this was going to be the episode? And how did you feel when it finally happened?
Oh, man. When Fennec made her call at the end of episode 8, I was like, uh-huh. That's it. This is it.
That's
like,
it.
There's no one else this could be. They fuzzed up her like audio. I was searching through Reddit, like, can someone please like fix this
clean
audio?
This up. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I was like, I was obsessed. And I knew it had to be this week. So I was like preparing. I was like reaching out to people. I was like, if you want to schedule me for Ventress, like, I think this is it, you guys.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that I was right because it was just such a perfect reintroduction of her character. Mm-hmm. I love that even though, you know, Ventress plays such a central role in this episode, it's about Omega and it's mm-hmm. about her helping Omega, which is like absolutely her MO on her redemption like spree, is that like if a young girl who is force sensitive is in trouble, Ventress is there like immediately. She just mm-hmm. has a sixth sense of like, I need to go help this child. And I thought that this was just such a natural continuation of the story where we left her off. Even if you haven't read Dark Disciple, picking it up after seeing her in The Wrong Jedi, everything makes sense about what she's doing. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was so beautiful and respectful and so satisfying when it comes to her character arc. Like, we will go into it, but like there are so many scenes that call back to who she used to be versus who she is now, and I think it was so beautiful. Like, I wanted to cry a lot, and I didn't. I was more like screaming and laughing and generally like being insane, but like I was so happy that she was back, and this character who means so much to me and is this beautiful representation of like what a survivor of trauma and abuse is in Star Wars, and how they can grow and come back and redeem themselves and atone for their sins. Like, she's just all of that and more, and I'm just so happy. It's amazing.
Yeah, and you saying that reminds us of Mo, because Mo, which, you know, not with us to discuss episodes and you know, episode by episode basis anymore, but we know that they come back once in a while to talk Star Wars when they feel up to it. So I'm all very excited to know what their opinion is, because like you, Ventress meant a lot to them. And because, you know, if you go back into like one of our first seasons when Mo was talking about that moment of discovery for their identity through Ventress, it was such a powerful moment, like for me as their friend, to like hear how Star Wars kind of connected with their own identity in such an important
and
way.
Self-discovery.
So it's really great to see not just the Night Sisters return for like that meaning that it has for a lot of the fandom, but also this character that is so powerful for everyone, because it's not, you know, Star Wars, as we know, is not the best franchise in terms of representation, especially like representation for characters that, you know, have to redeem themselves and continue and always be there bettering themselves, yeah. Because, you know, Star Wars is notorious for killing off characters once they redeem themselves. It's always good to see a character continue that journey. So I'm glad that the whole retcon, for, and we'll use that term cautiously moving forward, happened, because it's a character that definitely means a lot to a lot of people. So yeah, it's great to see them continue. And I'm glad that the episode just didn't beat around the bush. It's just like, hey, this happened at the end of the episode, and here she is. It's done. Mm-hmm. We're going there. And I definitely appreciated it that they framed it with the whole cave metaphor, right? Caves are important in myth. Obviously, they're important in Star Wars. And to have Omega dive into that cave and discover Ventress was really powerful imagery. And one of the things that, like, I really liked about the episode now in hindsight, I saw a post by Albert Padilla from the Cantina cast, and it's just like making comparisons between the framing of this episode versus the framing of Octo and The Last Jedi, with Luke's training with Rey versus Ventress training of Omega, and kind of the same way, where it's like they open with the cloudy setting of Paboo in the same way. That's the same setting for Octo, and then it's the same sunset and framing of Ventress in the background, just like Luke was with Omega. And I was like, one. So I'm just like, okay, that's really clever.
Yeah.
Thank you, animation, for keeping the Last Jedi love alive, because there's, you know, you know, there's a lot of people out there in the fandom that still think it's going to get retconned. So glad, you know, glad to see those callbacks to know that it definitely won't. But yeah, to see like that parallel between Luke Skywalker and Asajj Ventress is kind of a powerful visual callback, because it, you know, elevates Asajj from being, you know, like an anti-hero to being just, she's a hero.
Full-blown hero.
The same way that Luke Skywalker is, the same way he's a master, so is she. And they've gone through different things, but they're both like solidly in the light. So it's very, I think, very clever and powerful to see that visual comparison between those two characters. But then also, you know, everything that happens afterwards with, you know, the taming of the beast that we'll talk about later, I think was really clever. But I appreciated that, yeah, the episode was just like, this is the Ventress episode, and we're not, you know, we're not gonna, you know, mess around with it. Here she is, and we're getting into it immediately. One thing, though, that I want to hear everyone's opinion on is something that I'm still struggling with the season, and it's the mystery, right? It's always like, what's happening with the M counts? What is the M counts? And one thing that I loved about the episode is that I won this bet.
They said they dropped the word.
I was just like, they're gonna say midichlorians.
Finally
said it. I don't know how many years it's been in a Star Wars show that they that said
they've been
the word,
ignoring the word.
They finally said it, and I felt so happy to hear it. But yeah, it's just one of those things where, like, we know what it is. So, like, us as audience members, to see these characters try to understand what this mystery is when we already kind of know it is a little frustrating. So to have Asajj come in and not really give answers to the thing that we kind of want to know, at least to me, feels a little frustrating. Katrina, how did you feel about Asajj's role in coming in to answer the questions that we thought she might give us?
I think, I mean, obviously we know now that M counts are midichlorian counts, but I also feel like the unanswered questions, like, oh, is Omega force sensitive? Is she force strong? It's less about the fact that Asajj is unsure and more about the fact that Asajj knows what it's like to be taken away from her family. She knows what it's like to be abandoned, to be separated, to have that strong, you know, sisterhood ripped away from her. And what she sees in Omega is like, yes, this person has an end count. Yes, I could feasibly train them, but like, why would I take this girl away from her family when she's clearly safe? They're capable. Like, Ventress wiped the floor with those boys, but but they're capable, strong, strong people who care about her. And I think the fact of the matter was like, I mean, she says it sort of to Crosshair, where it's like Crosshair calls her out and says, "You're lying. You know, you know that Omega has the Force." And Ventress kind of basically goes like, "Well, I, you know," she doesn't say it outright, but it's more like, "Well, I could take her away, and you could lose her forever, or she could stay here safe with you." And if you, you know, and so she doesn't have an M count, or she like doesn't have the potential to be taken away, because Ventress doesn't want to do that. That's entirely against who she is. So I think that that unanswered question was less about like, is it black and white, and more about like, does Ventress want to make the decision to pull like Omega away from her family? Mm-hmm. And the answer is no.
Which I appreciate a lot when you frame it that way, because again, like I was talking about the parallels with Luke in The Last Jedi, that's a parallel with Luke in The Mandalorian, where Luke just comes in, no questions asked. Takes Grogu. And he's like, well, we got to perpetuate the mistakes of the Jedi. And this is like, you know, 30 years after the fact from the fall of the Jedi in the prequels. And Luke is still perpetuating those mistakes. And here's Asajj, like, even way before that, kind of having that compassion that Jedi Master Luke Skywalker did not have. And the fact that she's coming in being like, no, I can see through the lies of the Jedi, to quote another Skywalker. It's kind of cool then, because we see like the duality between what the Jedi canon should be or have been. It's very interesting.
Katrina.
I think that what Luke is missing is that direct context and experience with that Ventress has. Like, not only has she been an enemy of the Jedi Order, but if you think about it, she and her master were stranded on Ratatak. Mm-hmm. And the Jedi could have come at any time and come and save them, but they abandoned her master. And she says this to Anakin as well in The Wrong Jedi. She's like, "Your order abandoned my master." And I think that Ventress very much blames Kyne Erich's death on the fact that, like, his people didn't come back him up. Nobody saved him. Nobody took her back to Coruscant to be a proper Padawan. And that changed the trajectory of her life in a very, very distinct way that, like, I posted about this earlier, but, like, you know, she loses her master the same way Obi-Wan does, but she does not have the foundation that Obi-Wan did to continue onward as a Jedi. She became prey for Dooku because she fell to the dark side.
I mean, that's good. It's one of those things that's just like,
I love it.
It stops me in my tracks. I'm like, damn, that's deep.
I think too much about her.
No, but it's
all true, and I love it, because it is a trajectory that her life was so complicated, and then you have somebody like Omega, who is incredibly, you know, naive because she's young, but she's very compassionate. And then you have that conversation with the boys when they find out that she was Asajj Ventress and everything that she did during the Clone Wars. And she's so, Omega's so upfront, like, "But I believe in her." And they're like, "But you're so naive." And then she just looks straight across her. It's like, "I never lost faith in you, did I?" So sometimes, you know, faith is important as well. So I love, like, seeing this from Omega's point of view, that she's kind of new to all of this, but she's had a lot of experiences very young, and it's a different naivete from what we get from Luke, because Luke kind of like idolized all these people and he kind of wanted to perpetuate the Jedi Order. But from Asajj, it's a little bit different, as everybody was saying. Like, as soon as they ask her, "Oh, you know how to train, that means you're a Jedi, right?" "No, I'm not. I was trained in it, you know, at certain points in my life, but I'm not a Jedi." And I love seeing it that way too, because I remember thinking, why would she lie about her, you know, not having an M count? Like, clearly she had doubts about it. She's not sure how high it could be or not. But I loved your analysis of that, Katrina. It's like, as soon as she established that she's already safe with them, because she would be a target because she already has a midichlorian count. And it's like, okay, she actually has a family that takes care of her and has her back and everything. So I don't want to separate her from them. Like, I don't need to get involved at this point, unless they come with like bigger guns and they need more information. Because at this point, if Omega herself doesn't really show an interest in being trained, she just wants to know who she is. It's like, well, who you are is who you are with your family and you're safe. We're good. And I love that about it. It's like such a caretaker kind of way to look at it. It's like, our business is done. I came, I checked, I confirmed, we're good. Bye.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. Like, that, I think that if you think about it, Omega's force power and her display of it reminds me a lot of Leia. And that is that her force power right now, untrained, is based entirely in intuition, just like Leia, just like Finn. They just know. She has a knowing. And that's why she's always right about people. When Omega's like, we have to take Crosshair back, it's because she knows in his core, she can feel it, that he's good and he wants to do good. So when she constantly, especially in this episode, she really asserts herself when it comes to her belief in Ventress. Yeah. And I think it's really great that, like, it takes them a little while, but the boys listen to her. Like, they see her as an equal now. And so I think that in itself is, like, the display of what Omega's force powers are. It has a knowing, and that's more than enough for me right now.
Oh yeah, kind of like enhanced empathy as well too, because she kind of, you know, can get into somebody's mind and be like, well, maybe there were a bad guy at some point, but there's the potential for good because there's this empathy there, and it's one of the things that I love about Omega so much, and to have it heightened by having this interaction with Asajj Ventress. It's just, it's what makes this episode so special, because like you said, Katrina, it is very Asajj centered, but it's all about Omega, like how Asajj Ventress like pushes Omega's story forward.
No, but and one thing that you both have touched upon is obviously how the Batch has, like, still at this point, even though they've been through all these things with Omega, how they still have that instinct of just doubting her and ignoring her, and just go into that mode and just fight people. It's just like, it's endearing to an extent, but it's also like, just listen to Omega. She's almost always right, if not just, you know, always, period. But I will say, you know, for the action of the episode, it was kind of worth it to have that Avengers moment when they all get their guns and the main theme of the Bad Batch plays triumphantly, and it's all three of them, and it, which was funny though, because I will give the Kyners credit for doing that, because it was epic. But on the other hand, the minute I saw that, I'm just like, you guys are gonna get your ass handed to you now. Like, this whole triumphant moment is gonna be undercut by Asajj just like kicking your ass with her lightsaber, and in fact that's what happens. So I'm just like, okay, so
like, the most notorious war criminal that, like, the Jedi Council had to constantly send, not just, like, any Jedi, like, Anakin and Obi-Wan over and over and over again had to go after Ventress because no one else could, like, contain her. No one else could chase her off. She, like, wiped the floor with Luminara. Like, this is, you know?
Well, and you can correct me, Katrina, but in that first Clone Wars episode, she, like, fights Yoda, right? It's like, and survived the encounter. So it's like, as soon as they're like, oh, we're bad here, we're the Bad Batch, it's like, dude, I've taken off.
Yeah, it's like you're
way more stronger than you. You're like,
you're the himbo batch at this point. Just like, just relax.
Yeah. Might work, no reaction.
But it was still so cute that it's like, oh, we don't follow orders. Like, we're going to protect a girl. Like, get ready. And then Omega comes back and it she's the one that has to be like, please stop, because it's like, what, like, Crosshair's unconscious, like, Wrecker's on a chokehold, and Hunter's like on the ground with a lightsaber to his neck, and it's like, what happened while I was doing my quest, guys? Like, I leave you alone for 5 minutes and look at what happens.
I feel like Ventress intentionally was like, go climb that mountain, I have to show your dad like who's in charge here, because like, they're not gonna listen to me otherwise. And like, I think it's a great note for her character that even after the Batch doubts her, like, this is a character who routinely ran away, not just from battles, but from people, from connections, from being vulnerable. And like, she just sticks around. She stays there. And Omega acknowledges that, like, you didn't leave. And it's because
I love that.
Yeah, she sees that potential in Omega. So that in itself kind of answers the question, like, is Omega Force sensitive? I think that Ventress staying was an immediate give on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's, I mean, I think the biggest part of the episode for that is when we go into the sea, right? We have our Moby Dick moment where we're hunting, not hunting for the whale. And we do get the whale and we have that moment. But, you know, it's about communing with the Force and being in the sea. And the sea is a metaphor for the subconscious, all those things, blah, blah, blah. But it's beautiful, right? Because it's about communing with life, which is what we see a lot in Star Wars, especially with Rebels, with Ezra, and how he communicates with animals and whatnot. And that beautiful moment, right, when Asajj just calls all the bioluminescent creatures around her, but then, you know, maybe it's a little too kind in her calling. And we get the big kraken, sea creature, octopus.
It's like unintentionally, squid, whatever, I'm sorry.
Squid crab, whatever we want to call it.
Yeah.
And here's where I want a deeper dive from you, Katrina, if you don't mind, because I will admit that I'm a bad Star Wars fan and I have not read a Dark Disciple. But from, you know, watching friends of ours, YouTube videos that describe things that happen in the book, there is that scene in Dark Disciple where Asajj talks to Quinlan and tells him how he has to connect with the dark side of the Force in Dathomir, if I'm not mistaken, and go with the sea and go into the water and talk to the sea creature and have to kill it so that he connects with the dark side. Correct me if I am quoting that wrong, because I have not read the book. But then to see this scene in Bad Batch is kind of that inverse, right, of what happens in the book, which, one, the journey of Asajj from being like, you know, succumbing to the dark desires within her with the dark side of the Force, and now seeing her within the light and being in harmony with the light side and the living Force. How did you interpret that scene, and how do you see it as a companion piece to what happens between her and Quinlan in Dark Disciple?
Yeah, I love that you brought that up, because when, you know, when Jennifer Corbett and Brad Rao were talking about this episode, they said, we are not going to discount the events of Dark Disciple when it comes to Ventress's journey. And that doesn't necessarily mean like, oh, we're not gonna, like, we're definitely gonna explain, like, Dark Disciple and what happened, blah, blah, blah. What they meant was that we're putting in a scene that's gonna mirror something huge that happened in Dark Disciple, and it is gonna show you exactly how far Ventress has come. So to me, this scene was, yeah, like you said, absolutely a callback to Dark Disciple. It's, that whole thing was like a rite of passage for Night Sisters on Dathomir, was to go and destroy nature, destroy life, destroy this creature, and then you would become like a full part of the sisterhood in the coven. So it's not just her growing past who she was and who her dark side was, but it is her kind of healing, I want to say, like, generational wounds that were instilled in the culture of her people, you know, like, she is coming and becoming something beyond that, something more than that. And she's becoming this representative of the Night Sisters that is radically different from what they used to be. And then for her personally, like, throughout this episode, but especially here, she is patient, she is calm, she is chill, she is like I said, she never ran away or left or abandoned like this endeavor that she had. And that scene, oh my God, I was like ready to cry in that scene, because it was just such a great display of how far she has come as a person and where she's going next. Mm-hmm. You know, her understanding of the Force and her experience with it is as unique as someone like Ahsoka or Sabine or Ezra, where their paths are, very non-traditional, except she has the context, like Ahsoka, of what the Jedi and the Sith are and what those definitions were and how wrong they were when it comes to what the Force is and how people can tap into it. So I thought that scene was absolutely beautiful, not just visually, but for her story, like as a whole.
I mean, but let's be honest, and we talk about it in every single episode, it was
the animation
beautiful.
Just keeps like, getting better
better. That white shot when it's just like the little silhouette of her tangling the tentacle and with the, you know, with the squid monster thing.
From the moment that she dives in, like the hair.
Oh my god. Let's talk about wet hair and bad
water. Yes. Oh, that was cool. Like, I mean, I feel like the money went in to this episode.
Just the hair. I mean, because the haircut is amazing, but the pulled back when she comes out of the water is even better. Oh my god. I was like, Asajj.
But let's not take away credit from Omega. Omega's
Omega is like, rocking that haircut too.
Her new haircut, like, good job. Good job. Mm-hmm. But Nani, how did you respond to the whole aquatic scene, the water temple of sorts of Omega and Asajj?
I mean, the whole scene from the beginning, I thought it was so cute because when you see the boys like trying, like, we're respecting boundaries because mm-hmm. she said that we have to give her space for training, but we're still going to keep an eye on her. And then, you know, it's like the binoculars and then the Sasha looks at them and Wrecker's like, can she see me? How can he see me? And it's like, dude, oh my God, you guys are so dad jokes here right now.
Yeah.
So it's, I love to see, you know, kind of the overprotectiveness, but then just giving trust as well. And then effectively so, Omega gets frustrated because she feels like she's been trained. She feels like she's gained respect amongst the Bad Batch. And the fact that she has doesn't feel a connection with, you know, the Force. And I think Asajj was so good about it because it's like, you don't, you know, you were trained as a soldier. You weren't trained to do this. Like, you can stay with them. They won't let you tap into the potential. But I think the subtext is that you, just because you have the potential doesn't mean you have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
If you like being a soldier, if you like the life that you have with the boys, you don't necessarily have to commit to this, which is so different from, you know, how the Jedi were when they were literally kidnapped children and forced them to train. So it was really cool to see when she was like so frustrated with not reaching that instead of like just to continue forcing her to try to just demonstrate that there's a possibility for it to happen and yeah. just show, not tell. Okay, this is what can happen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that moment for me was very demonstrative of what Asajj Ventress has become, because usually she would be like very trigger happy, very no patience. And especially what you mentioned, Katrina, as well, when everything goes wrong and she knows that the boys are just making it so much worse because they're making the creature angry. And I feel like old Asajj would have literally like thrown her lightsaber at the ship to just like crash it and get the boys out of the way. It's like they're making it so much worse. And Omega picked up on it right away. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, guys, please go. Asajj Ventress can handle this. No, she can't. Trust her. Go. And then they actually do and leave. And then Asajj Ventress does her beautiful Ezra moment of just like communing with nature. And I think it's such a great lesson for Omega, and it's so good, I think, for us as fans of Asajj Ventress to see that she's in this place of peace, that even amongst mm-hmm. chaos she can just like center herself and bring this creature who has to be at this point incredibly defensive
mm-hmm.
and offensive because it's being attacked, to just like calm, peace, go under the water and go back. So there was so much that happened in this one episode in those few moments.
I love that, like, we talk about like callbacks to like Last Jedi and especially mm-hmm. Rebels, because that in itself, like Ventress's demonstration and her allowance for Omega to make her own decisions is a lot. It reminded me a lot of the way Kanan trained Sabine,
mm-hmm.
where it was like, yeah. you mm-hmm. just like Omega, she was not trained in the Force. She was in fact trained against everything there yeah. was about the Force. And Kanan ultimately says to Hera, like, as soon as she opens up to it, like, she's going to have that potential. She just needs to tap into it.
Yeah.
And we don't see Sabine make that decision until several years later with Ahsoka. Like, she doesn't yeah. make a decision to become a Jedi immediately. She has other priorities. And that's very much like what Omega is in right now. You know, she doesn't need to become a Force user right now. Yeah. She needs to think about, you know, going back to Tantus to save the other clones there yeah. to uncover the mysteries of the M-Count thing. And like Ventress knows in that moment, it's not just like, oh, she has a family. It's this kid isn't focused on becoming a Force user. This mm-hmm. person is focused on a completely different journey. And I feel like if Omega ever makes that choice, it will be Omega's choice. It'll never be Ventress saying right. like, come on, let's go. It'll be
yeah.
Omega calling up Ventress and being like, okay, I'm ready now.
Yeah.
I mean,
I already fulfilled the goals that I had. And now I want to explore this other side of myself. And that would be absolutely amazing. I love this not forcing, because one of my issues with the Jedi has always been like this culty attitude of like, yep. it's this and that's it. And that's the only way to do it. Ugh, cringe.
Yeah, it's interesting because as you guys were mentioning, like all those things, it reminded me of completely different, movie. Still Disney, but Moana. Always, it reminded me like of the scene with I forgot the grandmother's name. I'm sorry, but the grandmother has with Moana, like at the end of the movie, where she's just saying like, "Hey, we never should have put that pressure on you. Like, if you're ready to do this, like we will support you. But if you don't want to do it, that's fine as well." Which is such a cathartic thing to see, like in a children's movie, right? Because we're always used to seeing how the pressures of destiny or parents or whatever, it's like we have to live up, right? We have to live up to this thing that is thrust upon us, because you know the forces outside of us compel us to be this thing that we might not even want for ourselves, but we have to do because of the expectation or whatnot. And I think it's really powerful for Ventress to come in and be like that opposite side of that. And be like, hey, she doesn't explicitly say it, but by not giving Omega the choice, in a way she is giving her the choice, because like, hey, it's like, hey, if you're not ready for this and you're not asking for it, like then you shouldn't do it, because you are in a different path. And I think that's way more powerful than, you know, anything that has happened around Omega, because everything around Omega is either the Bad Batch trying to shelter her, Tantus trying to oppress her, and you know, and no one is just asking what Omega wants. And Ventress is kind of the first one that's here to be like, hey, just you do you, boo, and that's okay.
I love that, because that if you think about it, like, you know, Nani brought up like the children of the Jedi Order, who were essentially like, okay, well, you're force sensitive, we're taking you. Like, as long as your parents sign this permission slip, you're ours now. And it even goes down to Anakin and what caused him to fall. Like, you are the chosen one. This is your destiny. You're supposed to save everybody. And putting that much pressure on someone from childhood, of course it would drive them up a wall. Of course it would make him feel like he wasn't meeting the standards of who he is. And of course it would make him upset if, like, these same people who told him he was the chosen one, he's the guy who's going to save the galaxy, now won't let him hold a seat on the council. Like, these are all things that led to Anakin's downfall. And I feel like Ventress sees like her own downfall in that, like, that way, you know, like she there were expectations on her that she did not meet, and so Dooku abandoned her and left her to die. And not putting that pressure on Omega is such a radical thing to do in the Star Wars universe. And I just, it was so perfect. I love their relationship already.
I want to mention like one thing before I forget. And it's, we were talking about the whole beauty of the scene when Ventress communes with the sea creature and, you know, it becomes at peace with it. But I think that there's an equally beautiful scene after that. And it's when the Bad Batch is like bringing all of them back into the ship. And then we see Crosshair, who we've seen through this whole journey, just be detached and isolated and a curmudgeon, be like this sweet gentleman, just like take Omega's hand so that she can like come up to the ship. And then I thought that after that happened, he would just like walk behind her and Ventress would like walk up the ramp by herself. But then no, he stays there and also offers his hand to Ventress in a sort of kinship, like, you know, like I see you, like we are the same. We took different paths. I mean, say the same paths, but now we walk a different one. And I just thought that was a little moment that wasn't overplayed, but I thought was beautiful just the same. But, you're muted,
Katrina. Katrina, you're muted.
sorry. I like muted myself when I started talking. It was just the perfect moment for both of them. And I think that it was Crosshair seeing her. It was Crosshair acknowledging what Omega had said as well. Like, that's his display of listening to Omega, is that he understands that people can come back. Like, I remember how I was singing earlier in the episode, like, you guys are such hypocrites. Like, Crosshair was right next to you. Right. Like, what is going on? And it's just, it's such a wonderful scene of the two of them. Because like Goose, like you said earlier, this episode, so rarely do we get to see a full, like, redemption in a character and spend time with them and watch them atone and grow as people and make decisions about how they can make the galaxy better after having made the mess they made. And I think that, like, that one moment where Crosshair, and it's perfect for both of them because they're not fluffy people, you know, they're that moment where Crosshair reaches out and Ventress reaches out to him and they take each other's hands and help each other out. Like that, so perfect.
It's already becoming a ship on the online. It's not
the, name. Not
the, the name is very interesting. Katrina, do you want to tell us what the name of the ship is?
Yeah, I did want to say it because I didn't know if this was like a PG-13 show, but the kids are calling it Ass Hair.
Ass Hair. And
no, I wasn't sold on it before. I was like, oh, they're just redemption buddies. But like the moment they put out that name, I was like, yeah, I ship it now.
Here's where I think where I want the episode to get like a little spicy and not too spicy, because as I was watching the episode, I was thinking about the discourse behind the episode and into the lead up of it. Obviously the whole thing that all fandom, well, not all fandom like us, because normal fan doesn't care because they don't read books. They just watch the stuff and it's fine.
Yeah.
But the fans that are deep in it on social media and whatnot, the big discourse was like, how are they going to bring Asajj back and how is it going to deal with the book? Which I think is fair questions. But my question to both of you, and especially you, Katrina, having read Dark Disciple, do you feel that in a way bringing Ventress back was a distraction of sorts? Like, would we have benefited from just a new character, or do you think that maybe bringing Asajj Ventress back shifted focus from the narrative of the episode of, you know, Omega's story and just shifted it into like Ventress and what she did before and why isn't the episode explaining the book and all those things? And, you know, is it doing more harm in terms of like how we're discussing the episode? What do you guys think?
I think Ventress was the perfect person to bring in to this episode and deal with this with Omega because of her unique experiences. And I feel like this episode at its core is about Omega. It's about her, her, not just her M count, but like the future decisions that she is going to make in life are influenced by this episode and this meeting with Ventress, whether she becomes Ventress's apprentice eventually or not. She has an outside perspective now that she hasn't had before on what she could be. And so I, you know, as this episode progressed, I never thought, like, I just stopped thinking like, oh, we're going to get an explanation now. Cause that's not what this episode is about. Like I didn't expect Ventress to come in and tell a bunch of strangers how she came back to life. Like she barely tells strangers anything in the first place. And so I don't think that that had a place here. And one of the things that I paid attention to really early on was that when they were doing interviews and promoting the season, they were like, this isn't going to break Dark Disciple canon and we're going to have more stories with Ventress. Mm-hmm. So that promise off the bat, as I was watching this episode, I was like, oh, they're saving it for another time because this, it wouldn't have fit here. You know, we've had episodes of Star Wars TV in the past where it suddenly focuses on another character and their story and all this. And the fandom gets upset. Like, they don't want that. Like, the Mandalorian showing up and having a whole episode in the Book of Boba Fett. Like, I was online for that. I remember the reaction. And so I think not just for that, but for storytelling reasons, like, this was a very smart choice to, you know, Ventress, she says, I have more lives left. That's all.
Yeah.
That's all
the explanation you really need. Yeah.
Yeah. Because in the future, we're going to get more Ventress stories and we'll have that story told at some point. But as far as being faithful to the book with that, the sea creature scene, with the decisions that she makes, with the subtle hints of lightning scars on her face and her saying, I have more lives left. That's all I need right now. Like that told me everything I needed to know about whether or not they were going to be faithful to that book. So as far as I'm concerned, that book is still completely canon. And it also kind of raises questions about where Ventress is going to go because she had a romance with Quinlan Vos, who is still alive by the time of the Obi-Wan Kenobi show and is on the path. And so if Ventress decided, you know, whenever she came back, however she came back, I think that she would have immediately tried to seek out Vos. And I think that Vos would have gotten her involved in the path, or if she sought out Ahsoka would have gotten her involved in the Fulcrum operation. So there are a lot of different things going on. And I think that like Sorry, my dog is like making the most noise in the background as possible.
You don't hear it. That's fine.
Okay, my personal Basher is just like finding the noisiest things to play with right now. I think that, you know, this opens up the possibility for Ventress's story to become much more broad, for her to have an even bigger impact. And so I don't need that answer right now. And for them to promise me more Ventress content, like, I'm all about it. Give me 500 episodes of Asajj Ventress where you tell me about her story. Like, let's go.
I agreed. Nani, do you agree, or that you feel like Asajj's return was distracting to the narrative of Bad Batch?
Yeah, so I didn't read Dark Disciple. Obviously, I know that everybody was kind of shocked because she, you know, she died in the book, and then it's like, suddenly, why are you bringing her back to life? But I think it's important storytelling. Like Goose and Katrina have both mentioned that Star Wars tends to like kill off characters that start to have, you know, redemption stories. And I actually think it's important to give a character like her, who went through so much, who has so much depth, who has so much story left to tell, to bring her back. And, you know, she is a Night Sister. Now we know that magic is something different from the Force as well. So, you know, characters come back to life all the time. Like, you don't really need to like be focused on that if you feel like they're bringing more to the story. And I feel like Asajj can do a lot, especially for girls like Omega, girls that are struggling with fighting the Force. And I mean, it was so hard because, again, I don't have as much background on her as you do, Katrina, but I mean, taken from her family, the Night Sisters, who like worship this kind of death magic, to be trained by a Jedi who are like so hyper focused on only light is good, being abandoned by the Jedi, and then falling into the hands of Dooku, being trained into the dark side, being abandoned by Dooku. And it's, there's so much, and to see how far she's come after all of that, to me, is very inspiring. And I think it's stories that young people in general should see, because there's a lot of hope in a story like that. And to see how she can inspire Omega, how she can inspire the Bad Batch in general by being like, she was the most hunted assassin of the Clone Wars, and look, she's actually trying to help our surrogate daughter here. Just, it changes everything. So I think Asajj Ventress was a really good choice for this. And like you were saying, Katrina, if we get more stories of our queen here, I am all for it. And you can explain it any way that you want. It's storytelling, guys. It's fantasy. You can come up with a story to fit, as long as it does fit, you know, if logically it's like something from less complete left field, you know, is stupid. But Asajj worked in this context. So
yeah. And I think that, you know, throughout these like 10 years that she has essentially been dead, I have had so many fellow fans. Like, I'll talk about, you know, oh, I'm so sad Ventress is dead online. And they'll be like, what? She died? What? So, I mean, we, like you said, Goose, like, we're hardcore fans. Whether we read the book or not, we know she's dead. But you have to think about not only fans who just haven't read the books, but fans who started with the Bad Batch. Like, there are younger fans who don't have that context. And to have Ventress come in and go like, hi, my name is Asajj Ventress. I died however many months ago and blah, 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 blah.
It's like, and now it was brought back to life because and here's XYZ.
They don't need that. Like, this is the seed that plants their interest in Asajj Ventress. Now they're going to go back and read the Bad Batch.
And look Asajj Ventress,
I'm interested in those book sales and what they're going to look like over the next month, because I feel like a lot of people are going to go, like, get the audio book or get the ebook or even, like, order it online and, like, say, what happened to her? What's her whole story? And that sets up their curiosity for finding out how she came back. So perfect.
More interest in Asajj Ventress. And I feel like you're right. If they would have explained, that would have been distracting. Because then it's an episode about explaining how Dark Disciple happened and how Asajj Ventress came back to life. And then you distract completely from the Bad Batch and Omega's journey. So I thought it was, I was a little worried when we saw that she was returning on the trailer. Like, I was super excited about it, but I was worried about how it's going to get handled and how it would, like, maybe overpower the rest of the show. And I think very, very good decisions were made.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things, and you guys have talked about it beautifully, so I don't need to add too much to it. The only thing that I will say in addition to it is that the only problem sometimes with these stories are the fans themselves, because we get in the way of ourselves, and like all this discourse sometimes doesn't contribute to just like letting yourself be open to the story and just enjoy it for what it is, and like see how it just connects to everything else. And you know, we do a disservice to ourselves sometimes by being so plugged in to all the different things that we can't just like enjoy it. And sometimes always we should just enjoy the thing that we're watching.
Yeah, just face value, and, just sit there, watch that half an hour, and
But you know,
it was a gorgeous episode.
As all of them have been, absolutely. Though, like Bad Batch has been like, you know, has been batting 1,000 so far, you know, but we could be talking about this episode forever because there's so much to dissect. But before we start wrapping things up, it's still, you know, it's not just an episode discussing a show or a movie without discussing what we think could happen next.
Responsible speculation.
Oh, so, you know, we're episode 9. We're a little over the half point of the season. So,
and we get 2 episodes next week.
We get 2 episodes next week. We know that Asajj left us a little bit in a cliffhanger. Like, is she going to come back and during the Bad Batch, or is she coming back in Tales of the Jedi? Or, you know, who knows? We know that we finally know that they know what midichlorians are. We know that Omega has some force sensitivity. Katrina, what do you think? What do you hope to see? What's your speculation responsibly of the season going forward, or of Asajj's story going forward?
Yeah, Asajj specifically, like I said, my theory is that she is working with the Path. I think that, you know, Quinlan is the person maybe moving M-Count people from one point to another, but Ventress is the one doing the scouting, and that's why Fennec called her in, because Fennec, I mean, this even speaks to, like, how much Fennec likes Omega, because Fennec could have called any other bounty hunter. She said multiple bounty hunters were picking up M-Count bounties, but she called Ventress specifically, and I think that she did that for a reason, because she knew Omega would be safe and not be taken into the Empire. And I think that for Ventress specifically, like, she's going to return to whatever she's doing there, scouting for M-Count subjects, etc. I don't feel like she's going to come right back, because if she was, she would never have left. Like, she stayed during the episode for a reason. Yeah. And when she saw that Omega was safe and she was being taken care of, she returned to whatever she was doing. So I think that like, you know, going forward, like, the objective remains the same. Like, Omega wants to go back to Tantis. She wants to find out what's happening there. The Batch now knows what this M-Count stands for, which means they know who the victims of this project are, and they know what they do and what they stand for. So I think that, like, from here on out, they're going to start trying to track down where Tantis is. They're going to start looking for clues and hopefully, you know, return to Tantis. And, like, maybe, I don't know, maybe the Pabu thing is a dream. I don't know.
You know, that's coming.
maybe it's a bad dream.
Next episode.
I'm so scared. It's happening.
That's why they're doing the double episodes. It's like, just get it out of the way.
And especially after Ventress was just like, you need to get out of here. You guys have a target on your back. You need to leave.
Right.
I feel like they're going to start doing the preparations to get out, and that's when the Empire is going to attack. It's going to be terrible.
God, yeah.
I think the next episodes are going to make us cry. It's going to be the tragedy before the good things happen, because it's the last season. I really hope we end on a good note. I really hope we don't lose any more members of the Batch. I'm really hoping for a happy ending. Star Wars, please, come on, we have enough tragedies. Come on, give us a happy ending. Like, I think they're gonna destroy us with the next 2 episodes, but I'm really hoping that
that's one of those things. I don't know if it was a Kevin Scott or Charles Soule that said, like, with during some of the interviews with the High Republic, because everyone's just like, oh, why do you have to kill everybody and, like, have everything be a tragedy? And they were saying, like, well, we can't make the highs feel as high if we don't mm-hmm. take you
Yeah, if low. You don't get the low. Yeah,
right? I know, so yeah. I think that's going to happen now, right? They're going to take us low so that when the end of the season comes, like, we'll feel that catharsis. Which, you know, after
listening I can't to, swim.
We still have season two. We still have season two.
Oh my God.
He's dead, though. He's dead. He's dead.
I'm still not over that.
No, that was heartbreak. Like, you know, I've gone through a lot of breakups, but Andy Serkis saying that he can't swim, that obliterated me. Mm-hmm. But after, like, listening to all this, I was thinking that, one, Ventress is still working with Quinlan. I don't know what their relationship is, but I think it's interesting because Quinlan, since he's still a Jedi, he's going to be like, all Force sensitives go through the path. Mm-hmm. And Ventress is kind of like we
would
saw
probably
today
be
with
the stopgap of like, they have to choose.
They want to,
like,
sure,
we
or,
have to like, get them to mm-hmm. safety, but they can choose if they actually want to explore
right.
becoming Force powerful or yeah. explore finding a safe haven somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what the ending of the show might be. It might be after they storm Tantus and they liberate the clones, which I think is the catharsis that we need for Bad Batch to finalize the clone story from the Clone Wars, is to liberate the clones in Tantus. I think the final end for Omega and Bad Batch might be to seek out Ventress and be like, okay, we're going to help you with the path. And that way kind of, you know, tie everything together. And it ties into mm-hmm. Jedi Survivor in Fallen Order, ties in with Obi-Wan Kenobi, ties in then the whole narrative of Clone Wars and the Bad Batch. And it's just like all these forces working together with the path to, you know, save all these children that will
and with all die in the sequel trilogy. As well, because through the path, you can also have clones finding other clones. And trying mm-hmm. to, like, find mm-hmm. them lives aside from... Because we saw those, like, really young clones that still don't understand that they're not soldiers yet and were, like, totally abandoned. And a lot of them need a lot of direction, even though they don't have the Force. They're just, you know, kind of... just pawns of this war mm-hmm. that they don't really understand. So I think there's a lot of healing that needs to happen in the galaxy, and shows like these that kind of show us that healing is possible are important. And we saw, especially last episode, Omega with Crosshair, like, she's kind of the first therapist, you know? Yeah. So mm-hmm.
first and only so far.
Yeah. So I think we need more stories like these in Star Wars to kind of show that it's not only tragedy, but that healing is possible. So I'm just looking forward to how the Bad Batch is going to end and what we get moving forward, because they're clearly not done with Asajj Ventress as a character. So, and there's a lot of potential there for healing.
Yeah.
From her point of view.
Hell yeah. But
I love that you brought up, like, the idea of the Bad Batch becoming, like, involved with the path. Cause I feel like if we get to the end and they liberate Tantus, et cetera, and Omega makes the decision to go pursue training, the boys, I think they'll let her go. Like,
mm-hmm. yeah.
But I also think that they will also feel passionate about what is happening with the path, if that is what is going on, you know? Like, it would be like, how can we help these kids that are just like our sister? How can we mm-hmm. make a difference in the galaxy this way? Because, like, we can't go around being soldiers anymore. So what can we do?
I love that. But yeah, now that you were speaking of healing, and speaking of healing, it feels so good, Katrina, to have you back here at Triad to talk about Asajj Ventress. It definitely is a moment of healing here. And, like, the, you know, the stars aligned to have you come back and talk Star Wars with us, but not just talk Star Wars and Asajj. So thank you so much for taking the time and, you know, to talk to little old us about Asajj Ventress. It was definitely an amazing conversation. I've had a lot of fun. But before we sign off, why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the projects that you have going on? Tell us about What's Gulp, about Pedro Pascal, and any other project that you might have going on.
Yeah, well, thank you both for having me back on the show. I adore the Triad of the Force so much, and I love being here and talking to you guys. Like, it's always like refreshing to talk with other Latinos about Star Wars because it was such a core part of my family growing up. So, like, growing up as like a Latina in like, you know, Cuban Miami, like it was. The way we talk about Star Wars in Cuban Spanish is very fast and very exciting. And I'm not even Cuban, I'm Chilean, but like, you know, it feels good to be around y'all. Yeah, exactly. It's just refreshing. It feels good. And like, so as far as what I'm working on, of course, Pedro Pascal, the podcast about Pedro Pascal, is back. We're recording our third season, I think. And we've got some great episodes lined up. We've also got some really cool merch collabs coming up again with Alyssa Maria Gonzalez, which I'm super excited about. I have my other podcast right now, What's Glup, which is airing on the Geeky Waffle Network with our friends over there. We just released an episode with my friend Tommy Stella where we talked about Droopy McCool. And we also have an all-new Ventress episode that was a reaction to this episode out today. And I am also the host of In the Cantina with O Katrina every Monday on my Twitch channel where we talk about Star Wars and the fans that make it special. I think I'm doing other stuff, but gosh, I can't remember what that is off the top of my head. So if you're looking for the things I'm doing, you can look for O Katrina anywhere on social media. That's O-H-C-A-T-R-I-N-A. And just, you know, you can catch up with all the fun stuff. Most of my posts are about Ventress right now, but like, you know, that'll change a little bit in the future. Just a little though.
Perfect. Yeah. And as always, we will leave links down in the description below so that it's easy for everyone to find you. Do amazing work and good friend of the channel. So definitely check Katrina out and like all the products that they have going on because it's definitely amazing. And, you know, veteran of the Triad, you've been here before, and this is not their first rodeo with us, and it definitely won't be the last. So thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Katrina. It was really fun having you back, especially for this episode. Love talking to you about some Asajj Ventress and the Bad Batch because we get all of this awesomeness. But until next time, we are Triad of the Force. Remember to like, subscribe, leave us a comment. Let us know what you're thinking about the Bad Batch so far. Give us some Asajj Ventress love, please. She is our queen. And until next time, may the Force be with you. Bye.